friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded life is hard to believe, you know. There was a time. We see this world is changing. And it feels like we're in the middle of a really remarkable change. Does it feel more remarkable than the changes of the 60s? No. The 70s? No. The 80s? Well, maybe. 90s? Nah. But here we are, my friends, and we're at a time when we're trying to figure out what's real and what's not real. Reality and accountability. Very interesting subject. What is reality and who's responsible? We used to take comfort in certain fantasies we had, which was a belief that, you know, everything is going to be okay, and that if we just move along with a good spirit, everything will happen nicely. Fantasies in believing that there was an endless supply of money and credit, and you could buy a house and get married and, you know, just live in the future. And keep living in the future, as we have done with the government for 50 years, just putting off the debt. We thought that was one thing. We also had fantasies that the planet would take care of itself, that there was an endless supply of resources out there. We had this kind of fantasy. We had a fantasy that there was a basically goodwill in man, and that basically people will do what's right. The question is, what is reality and what is fantasy? What is real and what is not real? And that becomes a question, because if left up to the people who sell things, it's hard to find out what's real and not real, right? Your car salesman's not going to tell you what's real and not real. You know, most of your brokers won't tell you what's real and not real, and the bankers don't tell you what's real and not real, and a lot of them don't even know what's real and not real. What broker ever thought, oh, you put your money in this mutual fund and I guarantee you'll lose, or I know you'll lose 30% of your money in a little period of time? They never thought that. They thought, no, you'll make money and I'll make money on my commissions and we'll all be happy. And the bankers, where you put your money in the bank, the bankers thought, well, okay, we'll give you interest, and you'll put the money in the bank, and your money will be safe. So all these questions are coming about. You wonder, you know, you wonder what's real. And it brought to mind a beautiful thing I remembered from a while back, so I wanted to present this to you in a gentle way, and I'm going to start off with this, a little special treasure of mine.
Once, there was a velveteen rabbit, and in the beginning he was really splendid. He was fat and bunchy, just as a rabbit should be. His coat was brown and white, and was very soft. He had real thread whiskers, and his ears were lined with pink satin. On Christmas morning, when he sat wedged in the top of the boy's stocking, with a sprig of holly between his paws, the effect was charming. There were other toys that Christmas, nuts and oranges and a toy engine, and chocolate almonds and a clockwork mouse. But the rabbit was quite the best of all. For at least 2 hours, the boy loved him. And then aunts and uncles came to dinner, and there was a great rustling of tissue paper and unwrapping of parcels, and in the excitement of looking at all the new presents, the velveteen rabbit was forgotten.
The story proceeds. That's Meryl Streep reading this wonderful story called The Velveteen Rabbit. And the story proceeds to the life of this rabbit, which is an artificial rabbit made of velveteen, who lives in a garden, a nursery, with all the other toys, and they all speak to each other. But what I love about this book, and why I think it's so beautiful, is that at one point, the rabbit goes to the old skin horse and asks the horse, what is real? What is being real like? And I think the answer of the old skin horse was so profound that I wanted to bring it to you about reality and what real feels like. Because I'm sure you've asked yourself that question, what is real to me? What is real? Do I really love this person? Does this person really love me? Do I really care about what I'm doing? Do I really care about my work? Do I really care about people at all? Do you ever wonder? You ever wonder if you go beyond your own needs? You know, is the altruism really there, or should it be there? Well, let me take you to the second part of the story that I like, was when the confrontation between the skin horse who is real, and the velveteen rabbit who has not yet crossed over into becoming real. And let you hear this. It's beautiful.
The skin horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath, and most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces. He was wise, for he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger, and by and by break their mainsprings and pass away. He knew that they were only toys, and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced, like the skin horse, understand all about it. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you are made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Sometimes, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up or bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly. Except to people who don't understand. I suppose you are real. And then he wished he had not said it, for he thought the skin horse might be sensitive, but the skin horse only smiled. The boy's uncle made me real. That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always. The rabbit sighed. He thought it would be a long time before this magic called real happened to him. He longed to become real, to know what it felt like. And yet, the idea of growing shabby and losing his eyes and whiskers was rather sad. He wished that he could become it without these uncomfortable things happening to him.
Marjorie Williams is the author. The book is The Velveteen Rabbit. You'll find some wonderful copies of it. It's a great Christmas gift for children, I think. Has a great lesson to it. Nice Christmas gift for adults, too. And the Meryl Streep recording of it, I know, is available also. Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. See, nowadays, this question of real and unreal is a very funny thing. You know, If you think along with what's happening on our planet, there might have been a correlation with a great medical discovery, Prozac. Interesting, isn't it? The Prozac Nation got you to where you didn't worry so much. And people who may have been keeping controls on things by being overly concerned, you know? You have the overly concerned people. I mean, concerned to the point where they're crazy. Concerned to the point where they just worry too much. They tend to keep a balance in this world between the people who tend to be a little too risky. So now what happens when you take a nation of people who are overly concerned, and I mean the worry warts, and you calm them all down by giving them SSRIs and Prozac? Well, you know, suddenly there are a lot less people worrying. This serves everybody very well because it lets loose. You know, it's like in nature. When you get rid of the wolves, you know, the rabbits grow too much. When you get rid of, you know, the hawks or the eagles, you know, you're going to have more rats. Or when you get rid of the bats, you wind up with more belfries, whatever it is you wind up with. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So the idea here, my friends, is we have removed ourselves from what is real, especially since many people remove themselves from nature. You know, nature becomes your gift. You go out to nature. But if you're living in a city, in an urban environment, you know, you're kind of removed from nature, which is, you know, there's a sense in nature of what's real because the tree feels real and you feel real and the ground feels real and the smell is real. And you get that sense, you know, of real. So I think we lose track because now I remember once going to a hotel where they had a swimming pool that had waves. Have you ever been to a wave pool in a hotel? This hotel mimicked the waves of the ocean. So you go into the pool, which is indoors, and there were waves coming up inside the pool. And they came at different heights. You could change the heights of the waves. They could either make them big waves or little waves. And you're sitting in there on some cement thing on a pool, and the waves are coming in, and they have the sound of the waves. How would you know what real is anymore? And they flock to it, the kids flock to it, because this is a great place to play. So since we get separated from what is real to what is not real, we go to our experts. And let's say you're sick, and let's say you feel a twinge in your belly, a little twitch in your back. And you say, I think I must have hurt my back. Should I see a doctor? Should I not see a doctor? Should I see a chiropractor? Should I not see a chiropractor? Should I see somebody? Should I not see somebody? And what do? You go to say, is it real? That's what you do. You go to a doctor and say, is it real? Now, we have a lot of complaints about managed care doctors. You know, and about how they just shoo you in and shoo you out. You know the good thing about managed care doctors? They usually don't do procedures. Usually the managed care doctors are flooding their office with person after person who's coming in and saying, should I worry? Should I not worry? Should I worry? Should I not worry? How do I take care of it? How should I take care of it? But they don't make their money on procedures. Specialists make their money on procedures. What's important about that? When you go to a specialist who's a surgical specialist and you say, should I operate? They say, of course you should operate. If you go to somebody who's a medication specialist, like a psychiatrist, should I take a medication? Of course you should take a medication. So what is real? Where do you get the real thing? Strangely enough, the managed care doctor is more likely to provide it than the specialist. You know, balances we have in this world. So when it comes to something like you're the patient, what do? We've noticed one other penchant of professionals, which is when whatever it is that you're suggesting doesn't work, you blame the person. Instead of doing it yourself, doctors do it. Doctors blame the patient. Are you getting enough exercise? Why is my leg still falling off? Well, are you getting enough exercise? No, well, that's why. Blame the patient. Psychiatrists, people go to therapy. And they go to their therapist and say, why am I still depressed? And he says, well, you know, they do a thing like this is the one that was in the New York Times. Maybe you don't want to get better. The ultimate catch-22. How do you get caught in that one? You know, the very thought that you have depression is depressing enough, isn't it? I mean, people who are depressed don't feel well because the very thought of their depression makes them not feel well. So the idea that the therapist cannot answer you. I have a claim. I believe that every client should go to every therapist and say, what's the plan? Why am I here? What are we doing and how are we doing it? Now, that's a very good question to ask anyone. What's the plan? What am I here? Why am I here? What are we doing? And how are we doing? How are we doing? How are we getting along? So that if you go to a therapist, I asked a therapist who worked for me earlier today, and I said, what's the plan? You know, what do you have of this plan with this person? And she told me very clearly about a plan that she had. And in some cases, the plan is to help you separate reality from fantasy. I mean, if you're a paranoid type of person, overly worried type of person, overly cautious kind of person, wouldn't it be nice if you could have a place you go where you could absolutely trust and said, and you could say to that person, could you tell me, is it real or is it not real? Should I worry or should I not worry so much? Wouldn't that be wonderful if you could have that? Well, the unfortunate thing is that people who are giving you the opinion as to what's real is not real are often giving you opinions as to what's real for themselves. So if you go to a doctor and you go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist and you say, should I want to have babies or shouldn't I want to have babies? Well, if you're somebody who's sworn that the population of the planet is too big and that people should not have babies, you help the person understand that that's a useless fantasy. But if you're a person who's stuck with two kids and you're trying to support them, you may advise the person that having children is wonderful. So it's very difficult to get past the personal bias. So why do you go to counselors and therapists and consultants? Because you're trying to test your realities and you need to ask some questions. And there are very good, very good answers. There are things I could tell you. There a person came in to see me a little earlier today, and she said to me, maybe I shouldn't stop, I should stop coming here. And I said, well, maybe that might be a terrific idea. She says, I don't know exactly why I come here. And I said, well, the only reason I know that you come here is before you came here, you didn't trust anybody. And you didn't trust anyone at all. You didn't trust anybody you could be around. And now you've moved into a world where you're now in a world where you're not so worried about everybody around you because you've somehow learned to trust one person. Do you have one person in your life you could really trust? Do you? Well, that's what I think a lot of what we're looking for. And what we're looking for in our professionals is trust and accountability. And I think it's time because, you know, prices are going down. I heard from someone earlier today. She said to me that her apartment, one friend said she had moved out of an apartment and she had moved away and then she made a mistake in the place she moved in. She called a building, a rent-controlled building that she was in, and she said, is my apartment still available? A month later, and they said, yes, and we have three more like it. And then another friend earlier today called me up and said, oh, they just lowered my rent. They lowered my rent. It's getting to be negotiating time. It's getting to be time that if you buy a goods and service, you don't have to pay a premium. You don't have to wait online. You can now ask people, what do you got? And let me think about it. And I know you aren't the only answer in the world. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So it is not that you spend your time blaming all of them for being, you know, fraudulent and not having the answers. The answer is you have to look at yourself and not blame yourself, but you now have to become the person who asks the questions. What is this about? Why am I taking this medication? Why am I taking this medication? What is this medication supposed to do? How is it supposed to work? You come back 2 weeks later, listen, the medication didn't exactly work the way you said it did. What do you want me to do? Take another medication? Wait a minute before I take a second medication. Why didn't the first medication work when you thought it would work? Let's get it to work. Let's get to see. Let's get to your questions. You have a right to question everything. But it doesn't mean you should question everything in a way that's worrisome. It's just really your curiosity works for you. You think you ask the question. I mean, somebody I know was asking about buying a hybrid car. And she said, I think I'll go out and get a hybrid car. And then she looked at it and she examined the thing completely on whether or not it was something that was a good thing for her. But a very smart person, very thorough investigation, asked me my opinion. And I said, you know, I know you well enough to know that you're going to check this from every direction and you're going to find your answer. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. And the question is, how do you define reality and what's real and what's not? And what's real in love and what's not real in love? And when is love a fantasy and when is life a fantasy? And is this all a fantasy? You've seen the movie The Matrix, you know, are we all like living in The Matrix and there's a reality somewhere else that's totally different? If George Carlin was around now, you know what he would say? He had this comment about, you know, they're coming to get all your money. They're coming to get your Medicare. They're coming to get your safe. He said now, if he were here, he would say now they actually got the money out of the coffers of the government. They actually got the government to cough up money and put it in banks and insurance companies. How did that happen? What's real? Was that a real thing? Because, look, it saved the stock market from going down, right? And the stock market did not crash anymore because they did this. So, therefore, it must have been good, right? But you must be very confused. You must be bewildered. So what's going to happen is you're going to develop opinions. You're going to develop an opinion that's going to say, I believe it's real. I believe they are doing this to us. They are doing that to us. And you're going to get opinionated, strongly opinionated. And I want something else from you. I want curiosity, not opinions. I want you to look and ask yourself, what is real? What is not real? And where am I becoming real? And how can I become more real in this world? And I'm going to address that to you as I take your calls today. I'm going to be talking about you and your own sense of reality. And I don't want to talk so much about them and how they have victimized you. That's easy. Accountability, my friends, accountability starts with us. We account to ourselves, but can we account to ourselves without feeling negative to ourselves? Can we account? Can we say, I am responsible in some way? Can we do it? It's possible. 212-209-2900 is the number here. I'm going to take one of your calls, and we're going to talk about this, and then we're going to take calls for the rest of the hour after our break today. 212-209-2900. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. You posed the question about what is reality, so I have a comment.
Good.
And
What's your name?
My name is Ambra.
Ambra, A-M-B-R-A.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Reality to me is what you make of it, basically, and what feels good to you. Because I myself, you know, struggle with my reality and try to figure things out and analyze and, you know, what's good, what's bad. And at the end of the day, I feel like your reality is what you feel inside that, like, resonates with you and that feels right to you. But considering, you know, wherever you are, and it can change constantly. And when you bring up trust, the idea of trust in the one person you trust, I think trusting yourself, that is like your ultimate reality.
Well, Ambra, let me just go back on that for a second,
sure.
Okay? One question is, can you trust yourself? So, and if it feels right, then it's okay. If you are paranoid, schizophrenic, and you built yourself a cave, and you put up your wall in the cave, and you never let anybody in, and you sat down inside the cave, and you had no communication, you might sit there and say, ah, this feels right. You see what I mean? You could easily, our mind doesn't allow us, when it gives us a sense of safety, that's not always reality.
Right, right. I understand what you're saying, but I feel like when you really ask yourself honestly, does that feel right to you? Like if you're schizophrenic and you go into this cave and you create this idea, does it really feel right to you?
The answer will be yes.
Really?
Yeah. I've seen so many.
I feel like it's more like not trusting the mind, but trusting like your heart, you know, so to speak.
There's something, I think, Amber, I think you're somewhere in the middle there, you know? I think you're somewhere right on track. It isn't the felt sense of safety. We have to watch out with safety. Safety is something that could very often bring you to the unreal. Just because you feel safe, because a person could take heroin and they could feel absolutely terrific. And they could say, ah, this is real.
Right.
You know, heroin feels that way. It feels as real gets.
Right.
So it's really a question. It's not a question that you run through your mind. But reality has a couple of sustaining sense to it that it works, because you'll find that whatever reality you live, it works. It works in the world. You don't wind up getting angry and agitated. You don't wind up getting overly concerned. You don't wind up being isolated. Now, you, Amber, tend to isolate yourself, don't you?
Well, I tend to compare myself actually constantly with the world around me, and I find that it doesn't really help. It helps when I'm just centered.
You know, when you're comparing yourself to other people, right, that doesn't work. And when you're comparing yourself to other people, usually you're coming up short, right?
Of course.
Because that's the nature of the artistic person, and I could tell you're an artistic person. You know, I could tell you're creative. What do you do? Do you paint her?
No, I'm on my way to find out what I want to do in life.
How are you going to find out? How old are you? How old are you at this point?
I'm going to be 23 in November.
Okay, so that's a great thing. You're working towards finding you, and you're working towards it by a very, very important question. The brain is not enough. The mind is not enough.
Yes.
The gut is not enough. The heart has some meaning, but we don't know what the heart means because, you know, people fall in love for all kinds of strange reasons with the wrong person.
Right.
But there's a sense that you want to trust. And there's a sense you, Ombra, you know, are looking to find, and it's a sense of what's real and what's right. And I'll tell you the way I know it. The way I know it is when you get there, you don't feel scared, you don't feel defensive, and you don't feel angry.
Right. I think it's a matter of trusting yourself in any scenario, in any case, when you can be, it's like the eye of the hurricane, you know what I mean? It's like when you feel centered, you know that you're sort of immovable.
And like a tree.
Yeah, and I'm looking for that, you know, and I think
and
we
your
all
name,
are.
And your name means tree, doesn't it?
It doesn't mean tree.
It does mean tree, doesn't it?
Sure. No, it means it's Italian and also Arabic.
Oh, Ambra, right. We have a Stephanie D'Ambra here. Right. You guys must be related. Well, I thank you very much for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your wisdom. What a good question at age 23. Don't you wish you had asked it, those of you who are 24, when you were younger? Don't you wish you had asked that question? What is this real stuff? What is it? You know, what is, am I being real? Are you being real when you get angry? You know, you're never being real when you're yelling at somebody. You know that, don't you? When you're shouting, you're never being real. When you're screaming, you're never being real. That's always, almost always a removal. All desperation is away from what's real. There's a place of silent wisdom that you hope to reach for as you get older, but sometimes, you know, you just got to wait till you get there. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be taking more of your telephone calls. 212-209-2900. I'll be right back. Adam and Evenings. From the Buddha Bar. Remember Buddha Bar? Buddha Bar series, Living Theater. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Taking your telephone call at 212-209-2900. Reality is a very important question, and we get the wisdom of our young Umbra, who calls a little earlier and says, you know, you really got to trust yourself on some level, and learning to trust yourself and find which self to trust. You know, I mean, I saw a man get out of a car the other day, and he wanted to go over and punch this other guy because he cut him off. And he just, you know, is this reality? What's going on here? It was like a zoo. You know, it's like watching some primitive form getting out there and just trying to deal with each other. 212-209-2900. So reality is not one or the other. Reality, I mean, if you try to say, I don't like to watch dolphins eat other fish. You know, dolphins like to eat baby fish of salmon or whatever they could get their teeth on, because that's the way they live. You know, dolphins don't eat sandwiches. Dolphins eat fish. They eat young fish. They're savages in the water. Oh, no, don't talk about dolphins. You know, if you look at nature channels, no, I don't want to see the lion killing somebody. So is that reality now? Is reality nature? Is reality the dog-eat-dog or dog-eat-bird or bird-eat-fowl? What is reality? Is reality our natural aggression? Is reality our sexuality? Is reality something else? Well, it's hard to define. It's all of this, you see. And the confusion is so understanding. That's why you got to find somebody you trust. And if you don't trust anybody and you're alone in this world trusting no one, it's okay, except that you're going to just stay alone in this world. And you're going to feel this like growing sense of isolation, and the walls build up around you without you even knowing it. It's like you grow callous, you know? You get this thicker skin and you feel less and less. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille taking your calls. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
Good, thank you.
You know what? This is such an interesting topic. I mean, it's so difficult to speak about it just in a couple of minutes, but one of the things that has helped me is, you know, as you go through life, you make mistakes, and at the moment you made those mistakes, I mean, I thought I was 100% correct. It's only in retrospect that I realized they were mistakes, you know. So what I ask myself now in order is like, what is my objective? Once I define my objective, like, for example, if my objective is to find someone to be my partner in life, you know, then I look at what I'm doing. What can I do? What have I been responsible for? And anything that detours me from finding that and making that a wonderful, loving relationship, then I realize, you know, because it's so hard to trust yourself when you've made so many mistakes. But not from a negative place I'm looking at it. I don't know if I'm making myself
clear. Well, you are making it. What's your name, by the way?
Tony,
let me ask you something, Tony, because you're such a straight shooter. I want you to go back and think about your relationships and tell me the following. Now, if we didn't make this a judgment, but I love this question to ask myself all the time. When was I stupid? Right? Now, okay, now if I could ask you, Tony, tell me something stupid that you did regarding a love relationship, and you could say to yourself, boy, that was stupid. I wish I didn't do that.
We don't have the time. I would be here all day.
Give me one. Give me one, of course. And thank you, Tony, because every one of us would do it on one level, and on another level, maybe we weren't so stupid.
Again, it has to do with just kind of just learning as you go along.
And okay, tell me one of your stupid mistakes, though. I really want to hear one.
Oh, my God. I was just, I just dated so many people at, you know, at the same time, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It didn't work for you.
I'm judging it, yeah.
It didn't work for you to date so many people at the same time.
Yes.
And why do you think you were doing it, Tony? Why do you think you were dating so many people at the same time?
Absolutely. I was just feeling a need that I was absolutely feeling a need that was there, that I was looking to get it filled, and, you know, by somebody else, and that's not what I found later in my life now, is that that just doesn't work for me. It doesn't
work
for me.
You know what the big thing about dating a lot of people is, Tony?
It's a run.
You know, you never have a risk. See, the beauty of it is, if you date like 10 people, it's great, because then if one lets you down, you got the other 9. You see?
Yeah.
And that's what that kind of womanizing, well, I even hate the word womanizing, but manizing, but going around having a lot of people makes you never at risk.
Absolutely.
You know? And you're a guy who did not want to take risk with your heart for a good period of time.
That's right.
Now, I could see you're moving towards relationships where you take more risk.
Oh, yeah. I walk around with my heart in my hand.
Really?
That's okay. I love it.
Yeah. It's nice to have found it, huh? You might have thrown it in the garbage without looking. You had to go search through your old trash bags. Where did I put that heart?
You know what's funny? It's a really beautiful thought that I remember... I remember when I was a kid, you know, I would look at movies and I would see like a great man with being a good father and a good husband or son, whatever. And I said, you know, that's what I want to be when I was a kid. But then somewhere in my teens, I lost that. And I think I'm just blessed that I found that person again. I found myself, and that's who I am now. I'm the man that I want to be now. You know, it's really beautiful.
Good for you, Tony.
Thank you so much.
Sure. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. I was stupid when. You can think of how many decisions you made in your life that were wrong. Just plain mistakes. Some of them based on passion. Some of them based on a reaction. Some of them based on... It's okay. If you made a list of all your mistakes, it wouldn't be a very bad idea. You could sit down and you could write my 1,000... best mistakes I made in my life. And then if you could do that, and if you could take care of yourself, like have a cup of tea with it and have a nice sip of tea with each one, you know, to consider each one and say, oh boy, what was I like during that time when I yelled at my boss and I said, this is the wrong society for us to be, you know, when you brought up things, when you wrote letters to people you shouldn't have written letters to, when you proclaimed your love when you shouldn't have proclaimed your love, when you cheated on somebody, all of these things that you would consider mistakes, and to look at them and just to put the title, My Stupid Errors, and to forgive yourself and to say, okay, that was all part of my transition. But to be able to list them is a very good thing. Because what most people do is they don't list their mistakes, they blame somebody else. They say, my mistake was trusting him. No, 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 no. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there. Yes.
How are you? This is Yasmin.
Yasmin.
How are you?
Excellent.
I'm calling because what you're talking about today, it was like a gift from God, I swear. Because I've been struggling with the concept of reality, and just hearing you, I'm listening and I'm saying to myself, you know, reality has so many layers, kind of like Shrek. It has layers of onion, you know. And I think that the foundation of all of our reality is our environment and the people within our environment and how we interact with those people. And I think that the true core of our learning is to trust ourselves, because everybody's reality is different, so everybody is going to react within their own environment differently because everybody's perception of the reality.
But Yasmin, before you come up with the concept and the cure, because virtually everybody would say you got to trust yourself.
Yes.
Tell me about a current conflict, since the voice from God is coming down through WBAI now to embrace you and say, okay, Yasmin, you've been struggling at this. Which reality are you struggling with? Which one?
You know, you just were discussing anger and shouting at somebody and that's not the answer. And you're right. And that was my mistake that I just made, by shouting at somebody and not shouting in the real sense of shouting, but accusing can also be like shouting, you know, even
sure.
If you're talking calmly and you make an accusation, that's still shouting to the other person on the other end, you know.
The other person being somebody you're seeing, who you're dating?
I'm who I'm married to.
Who you're married to, and you accused him of doing what?
Of just not honoring and respecting me.
And what did he do to not honor and respect you in your mind when you yelled at him?
Just not telling the truth.
And he lied to you about money or about sex?
No, neither.
Oh, what else is there?
In my world, a lot.
And what did he not be straightforward with you about?
Just about feelings, you know, and.
Okay, you're kind of ducking just a tiny bit.
I am.
Okay.
I know I'm on the air, so I don't want to get too personal.
Okay.
But I definitely wanted to just.
Okay, but here's what I want to go with you, okay? Here's where I want to go with you. Here's the thing that we have to see.
Yes.
And this may help you. Whenever we see that we have someone in our lives who may not be telling us the exact truth, the question we have is, if we say to ourselves, how did I make it unsafe for them to tell the truth? What do I do that makes it unsafe for them to tell me the absolute truth?
No,
without blaming yourself. And that's kind of the answer you're giving me.
Well, I'm taking ownership that I obviously had to do something to make him feel that he can't be open with me.
Yeah, and it's like, now he may just be somebody who can't be open with honest anybody, and I know a lot of people like that. But also, do you want reality? Do you want your husband to say to you, you know, honey, I'm a little tired of us, and I find us a little boring, and I don't know what to do about it, and I don't understand how we could get past it.
Yeah, I would love that, yeah.
You would?
I would. I. To me, the truth can never hurt more than any other lie. Honest, the truth, no matter what it is, even if it hurts, I don't think it could hurt more than living in a lie.
You should tell him that.
I should tell him that calmly, right?
You should tell him that if he told you that he was a little tired of you and him, that he was a little bored with the sexuality, that he was a little indifferent about your relationship now, that you would find it okay for him to tell you that, because from there you could work something together. You should let him know that it's okay to tell you that. And maybe it would require your telling him a little of the same.
Absolutely. Without shouting.
Without shouting. Yeah, it's like friends, you know. In every love relationship, in every marriage, there are usually two friends that could be found. And if the friends could just hold hands for a minute and talk straight, it would be really beautiful.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for not telling us exactly what it is that he lied to you about. Because nobody heard it on the air. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one more call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. I hear you, yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi, I'm on. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, my wife and I, we love your show. My wife's an acupuncturist, and she works in the city. And she loves your show, so she turned me on to your show. I'm 46, I'm bipolar. I come from an alcoholic family, and It's taken me 36 years to realize that my behavior, my reality, was somewhat skewed by being bipolar, because I didn't know, I just had symptoms.
Boy, that's a really funny thing, isn't it? When you were in a manic phase, how would you possibly know that that wasn't real?
Yeah.
How would you possibly know? There's no way to know from the manic place. It seems like such a good self-reinforcing, you're happy, you're jovial, you're on top of the world kind of. How would you know?
You wouldn't.
That's great.
You know, it feels so good. And me, I was an exercise professional. I teach ex-fitness. I teach aerobics. So being in manic state, you know, was great for me because all I did was work out all the time. I kept moving because I was so full of anxiety and manic behavior. And I teach class, and I didn't have to do anything but keep moving. But when I was depressed, I self-medicated. You know, I was addicted for a long time to various substances, and so that's what kind of kept me from crashing. But as I got older, my wife, I met my wife at 30, and she kind of, noticed these behaviors, And so she was curious, and things got worse as I got older. I couldn't, at 40, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't rebound, you know. I used to be able to rebound, and either through self-medication or through drinking a lot of coffee or taking these energy up drinks, you know. But it's amazing that you talk about perception and reality.
Absolutely.
My reality and my perception was changing all the time.
Great. Let me ask you something. When you were, who did your wife fall in love with? The manic person, or the depressed person?
I think the depressed person. When I met my wife, I think I wasn't really rock bottom, but I was kind of depressed. Actually, I was living on the fringe. You know, I was kind of living with friends in New York, and I met my wife at the health club. I used to teach exercise at. And she met me in my manic state.
I would imagine, yes, because, you know, she's an acupuncturist. Now, her job in life is taking people and calming them down.
Yeah.
Her job is she takes people who are living on pins and needles, you should pardon the expression, because she's an acupuncturist, and her job is to find energy and work with energy and redefine energy. So I didn't imagine that she would find a depressed person. She would find a manic person,
yeah,
and love to manage you. Now, this is a problem, because when you slide into your depression, it throws her right back on herself.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
her reality was you, the manic guy.
Yeah.
You know, but it sounds beautiful that the two of you have worked this together.
Oh, yeah. We've been together now for close to 16 years.
That's a wonderful thing.
And so she's a very loving and caring person. And, you know, I thank God that I met her, because my last episode of depression almost nearly made me kill myself, because I really just couldn't take it anymore.
No. It's so
Mania,
deep.
And then the depression got
Boy,
worse.
That slide is so big on the other side.
Yeah, it is. It's like really at the bottom, like you're being dragged by a bus, you know.
Yeah.
And you just can't take it anymore.
And you know, the interesting thing about depression is one of the signs of depression that we therapists always hear is they always say life is meaningless. The truly depressed person. I could see reality, and reality is ugly, and therefore life is meaningless. Now, that's the phrase of somebody who's deeply depressed.
Yeah,
what is wrong with seeing reality and seeing, even if it is meaningless, why do you have to feel bad about it?
Yeah, you know, I think that is the hardest part I've been medicated now for a couple of years. I've tried several different medications, and lithium seems to work fine for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be calming my brain down, and I'm starting to see reality in a different way. But I'm stuck in a place. I'm stuck in this place where I'm numb. You know, I'm empty, but I'm still depressed. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I still go through periods of intense anxiety, like I'm going to lose everything. My life, my wife, my job, and everything, you know, so I just keep moving. But underneath, there's a dullness that I know might be the depression being, you know.
And maybe the lithium also.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not that you shouldn't do it, you know, because you've thrown a chemical balance back in there. It could be any number of things, but you know, you're wise. And what I love about it is you're wise.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Kevin.
Kevin, you know, if you have the perception you have, if you have the willingness to see, if you have the willingness to look at yourself without blaming yourself and punishing yourself and not blame the world, then even with a bipolar disorder like you have, you're going to shine in this world. And you know, even, are you still an exercise instructor?
No, I install satellite TV.
You sell title, because I'm seeing you as a...
I install it.
You install it, all right. That's
nice.
You're in the communications world.
Yeah, but I still work out. I work out for myself, you know, and I offer my wife some advice, and some of my coworkers once asked me to do, but I don't teach fitness anymore.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your wisdom.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure, it's a pleasure.
Okay.
Right. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more stuff. And I'm going to let you out with a little spirited jazz here. What you're about to hear is one of the best collaborations of Miles Davis and John Coltrane and a track called Alucha, which I happen to love. This is just one of the finest moments in jazz. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You could go to the website, thepositivemind.com, or you can go to WBAI.org and download today's program if you want to replay it.
Winfrey. 46 million viewers in 134 countries watch her daily. She's a billionaire, a pal of presidents, a brand name. Time magazine called her one of the most influential people of the 20th century. But to Professor Janice Peck, the fact that her rise to fame parallels the rise of neoliberalism is not a coincidence. On October 23rd at 11 a.m., Joy of Resistance is proud to air an interview with Janice Peck on her new book, The Age of Oprah, Cultural Icon for a Neoliberal Era.